Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman and now Steve Jordahl, reporter and news anchor extraordinaire for American Family News.
Yo.
Oh, and he's from the hood, apparently.
I thought he was about to start singing, row, row, row your boat.
No, I think what I was about to start singing was, yo, yo, ho, ho, a pirate's life for me.
Well, music is one of the requirements. Being musically gifted is one of the requirements for working over at American Family News.
Yeah, we got to learn how to sing.
Yeah. All right, Steve. Let's get at it.
Well, there's so many things to talk about today. One of the big stories that we haven't covered, that you guys haven't covered yet today, and we need to get to, is an executive order from President Trump yesterday to declassify the FISA warrants for Carter Page, the FBI interviews with Bruce Ohr, and text messages relating to the Russia investigation of James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, and Lisa Page, and Bruce Ohr. These are all the key players in the Trump-Russia collusion fantasy. I'm sorry, investigation.
Do a brief rundown of who these individuals are.
All right. Carter Page was a former,
on the Trump campaign.
He was one of the people that worked on the Trump campaigns, and he was investigated by the it was prior to the Mueller probe, but it was by the when they put out the FISA warrants, he was the one that they put a warrant out on.
And he did not know he was being spied on.
I mean, he didn't, because FISA is a secret court. Bruce Ohr is another, I believe he's another Trump associate.
Who's
at
this?
One point. Bruce Ohr?
No, he's a DOJ official.
Thank you.
And his wife worked for Fusion GPS.
That's right. That's who.
That
I'm sorry.
Paid
yeah.
for the Steele dossier.
Yes.
Which was the fake information regarding President Trump that was used in front of the FISA court.
Right.
The Foreign Intelligence. What's that? Foreign Intelligence
Surveillance.
Surveillance.
Act.
Surveillance. Yeah. Yes. Surveillance Act. And so that. So that's tied in. That's who Bruce Ohr is. Mm-hmm.
Then James Comey, of course, is the former director of the CIA, the FBI. Andrew McCabe was the one that replaced him briefly. And then Peter Strzok and Lisa Page are the two malcontents within the FBI who were exchanging all those texts.
Right. And Peter Strzok, very influential and powerful within the FBI, was handling the investigation into the email server for Hillary Clinton, all those kind of things. I just want to kind of trigger
Thank
in people's
you.
Minds who these people are.
They're all key players. And what we believe happened was that Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, but mostly Peter Strzok, and then Bruce Ohr took advantage of this dossier. And they leaked news articles about it. They sent, I believe, James Comey to the president to brief him on parts of it, but not all of it. And then they used the resulting news stories together with what little pieces they could present to the FISA court to open up this investigation on the president and possible collusion with Russia. So far as we know, this document that they used,
the Steele dossier,
is fantasy. Mm-hmm. But it was cloaked when they brought it to the FISA court. They presented only the parts that looked like it might pass muster, and the judge signed off on it, which got this whole witch hunt, as the president calls it, going. Now, the president has said, we want all the documents related to all that ongoing, the unredacted FISA application, all the emails that are going forth, unredacted. He wants all those blank spots taken out and released to the public.
And he has the authority to do that.
He does, because he's the president.
Right.
So he's going to unveil the behind-the-scenes machinations of the people that were trying to get President Trump. And I think, my opinion is, we're going to find out that there is a conspiracy going on here to try to dump the president that is both illegal, unconstitutional, and should, but probably won't, result in charges.
Yeah, absolutely. And And the thing is, you almost ask yourself, what else do we need to know? I mean, there's been so much evidence that has come out that has been damaging to the reputation and integrity that of Robert Mueller, of Rod Rosenstein, and everyone below them who participated in this under President Obama, and they're still participating in it under President Trump. So we'll see what's in this stuff. It's going to be very interesting to look at. But if it's what I think it is, and just a text message that came out this week from between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, this is what they text each other after James Comey was fired. They said, "We need to open this case since Andy McCabe is acting FBI director." Well, what is that case? Well, a few days later, the special counsel was brought up by Rod Rosenstein. So, were they involved with working with Rod Rosenstein and getting the special counsel? I think things like that, everything's going to become clear after all this stuff is released and read, whether it results in charges or Bob Mueller being fired. That's a good question. I think it probably should, but we'll see.
What's going to be fun for me to watch is to see how the media, the mainstream media, which has been peddling this Steele dossier and all of these things like their truth, what are they going to do when it's been exposed as not true?
Well,
because they're invested.
And one of the things that could result in terms of charges, again, who knows what is going to happen in terms of the Attorney General or the FBI, but the way this information was handled before the FISA court, because it appears, now we don't know for a fact, but it appears that maybe lies are too is too judgmental here, because I'm not sure. But they either lied to the FISA court about what information they had in asking for a warrant to begin spying on the Trump administration, okay, or they were selective in the kind of information they presented to the FISA court. I think, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So that they get the warrant, even though if they presented all the information as legally required to the FISA court, the judge probably would have said, well, forget it. It is clear that the Democratic Party, the Hillary campaign, paid for the Steele dossier to try to find dirt. It was Oppo research on President Trump. You want me to use democratically paid for Oppo research to grant you a warrant to spy on then candidate and then president-elect Donald Trump? I'm not going to do it. So that's stuff that we're going to find out, I think. So,
if you had a teenage daughter and came to you and said, Daddy, I'd like to go hang out with Lisa tonight, and just a random Lisa, and you said, fine, you know, you and Lisa are good friends, go ahead, but she doesn't tell you that they plan on going to the kegger that's down the street, you know, for the school party with all the beer and everything, that's information you'd probably want to know.
Right.
Yeah.
But she left out. Well, and she wasn't lying. She is going to go hang out with
another aspect to this is Lisa Page, in her sworn testimony before Congress, said, as of May of 2017, we had no evidence to hint or to show that there was any collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. Well, guess what happened in May? Rod Rosenstein hired Bob Mueller and his other dozens odd Democrat attorneys to investigate President Trump. So if the DOJ and FBI know, all right, you know, we've been looking at this for 9 months and we have no evidence to support our investigation, but hey, let's hire a special counsel, give them a $20 million budget a year, even though we don't have any evidence of a crime.
And what he's going to do is he's going to go after people within the orbit of President Trump and begin investigating things that may or may not have happened 10 years ago, try to find some leverage and then squeeze them to fish for something we might actually use to justify the existence of the special counsel.
Right.
I mean, this whole thing stinks to high heaven. And I would take your analogy, Steve, and say, well, if my daughter said, I'm going out to hang out with Lisa, but didn't tell me that it wasn't the Lisa I thought, her best friend, but another Lisa. All those are the kinds of things that happened before the FISA court. And so this is a brilliant move on the part of the Trump administration to say, fine, you want to play games? I'm going to let the world know what you've been doing.
I only guess my question, Walker, is why didn't he do this 9 months ago?
Well, I think he – well, that's a good question. I mean, he could have, and it would have still been a great thing to do. But I'm sure that, first off, you got to go through – I think he wanted to let the congressional process play out, let all the committees try to get all the information they can. And since the FBI and DOJ have stonewalled Congress, now it's time for the president to take action. But I think if he would have taken action too early without giving Congress and the FBI time to respond to each other, then it would have seemed that he's unnecessarily intervening and not letting Congress do their job. So I think that's why you see the timing here.
The Plus, cynical politician in me says that maybe President Trump has his own October surprise he wants to launch.
Well, it could be both and. Yeah. Both yeah. and.
Hey, by the way, when is this information supposed to become public?
The first of it should roll out later this week. It takes
people
a
are
couple
be
days.
All over this.
Yeah, it takes a couple days for that to go through the process of declassification. Now, the president has declassified it. He said there's going to be nothing should be redacted in it, but they still have to go through a process. So a couple
and the,
days,
and maybe the kind
and
of thing
over
where
the next couple weeks.
Where they say go back to the president and say, okay, you said everything's. To remain open,
right.
Nothing redacted. How about this particular instance? Maybe you didn't think this, or
could
you don't
be.
Know. So those
or
kind of things.
They
might.
Just have to make a records request down there to dig up the records. It takes a couple days to do that.
So. All right. What else you got?
Do you remember the other day I told you we were talking about the immigration and why Democrats want an open border, and we said it was because the Democrats hope they vote Democrat at
right.
some point. And we said if they can convert all of them to Republican voters, you'd have the wall funded in 10 minutes. This isn't exactly going to turn every Hispanic voter into a Republican. However, the median household income for houses with Hispanic leadership hit a record high of $50,486 in 2017. It's a 3.7% increase over 2016. The Trump economy is helping the Hispanic community really big time.
And it's, you know, it's also helping the black community
yes.
in this country. So you have two very influential, very large minority communities in this country being helped economically. Now, we kind of joked around a little bit in our story meeting. You know, the Democrats, as you mentioned, have clearly wanted an open border at the southern border of the United States because they expect that Hispanics coming in from Central and South America who come from largely socialist or socialist-leaning countries, that they will come into this country and be socialist-leaning
right.
themselves, which it means nowadays Democrat.
Right.
It would be very interesting if this kind of economic boom continued in the Hispanic community and turn them all into Republicans, or a majority of them into Republicans. And to your point, then they'd be going, "Hey, we need a wall down on our southern border."
And frankly, I think if you look at the electronics math or election math, as it is, you don't need a big swing. President Trump got a larger percentage of the black vote and the Hispanic vote than people thought he was going to get.
Right,
and it's one of the reasons that he was elected. So a swing of 3 or 4 percentage points. And this should be able to, in my mind, I'm thinking this should be able to get you 5-6% more Hispanic or black
well,
votes.
And
Hispanic
add,
votes in this case.
You add to that the fact that a couple weeks ago a poll came out that said that amongst the African American community, President Trump's support has gone from like 16% to like or 21% to 36% or something like that. But it was about a 15% increase in support. So you pull 15% from the black community vote, and then you pull a couple percentage points from the Latino, and then you're looking at the end of the Democratic Party as we know it.
It could be, and of course you heard President Obama taking credit for all the economic stuff. Mr. Obama, no, you did not build that.
Which is taking a famous statement he made. 2012
yeah,
in his
right.
re-election campaign. All right, what else? What else you got?
I ran across a story that just floored me the other day, yesterday. Someone was rummaging through the Reagan Library after something, and they uncovered a letter. This is a letter from President Reagan to his father-in-law, Loyal Davis. This is his wife's father. Nancy Davis Reagan's. And Mr. Davis, Loyal Davis, was an atheist. But he was on his deathbed. And President Reagan sat down at his desk at the White House, and on White House stationery, penned in his handwriting a letter to Loyal. It has some remarkable things. He goes through and tells a story about how when people prayed for him, he was healed of an ulcer that he had because of the stress of the president or of the governorship at the time.
Governor of California.
He was governor of California. Several people prayed for him, and without him even taking that very seriously, he went to the doctor and found out that he was healed. All that to say, he went on, and this is what I want to read to you. Loyal, this is President Reagan writing. Loyal, I know of your feeling, your doubt, but could it just implore you one a little longer? Some 700 years before the birth of Christ, the ancient Jewish prophets predicted the coming of Messiah. They said he would be born in a lowly place and would proclaim himself the Son of God and would put to death, was put to death for saying that. All that, in his handwriting, all in all, there were a total of 123 specific prophecies about his life. Now, I know that it's probably the hardest for you as a doctor to accept. The only answer that can be given is, it's a miracle. But Loyal, I don't find that it is the greatest miracle. His greatest miracle is actually the life of Jesus, a guy that no one expected much of, in my words, birthing a movement that has reverberated to 2,000 years. But for 2,000 years, and this is reading again, he has had more impact in the world than all of the teachers, scientists, emperors, generals, and admirals that have ever lived put together. The Apostle John said, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him would not perish but have eternal, everlasting life." We have been promised that all we have to do is ask God in Jesus' name to help when we have done all that we can. When we've come to the end of our strength and abilities and we'll have that help, we only have to trust and have faith in his infinite goodness to mercy. Loyal, you and Edith have known a great love more than many have been permitted to know. That love will not end with the end of this life. We've been promised this life is only a part of life, and that a greater life, a greater glory awaits us. It awaits you together one day, and all that is required is that you believe and tell God you put yourself in his hands. Love, Ronnie.
Well, that's extraordinary. This is just a reset for folks who are just tuning in. That's your reading, and admittedly, it's in Ronald Reagan's handwriting, so it's not easy to read that on the air. But this was a letter that Ronald Reagan wrote as president, right?
He was president.
To his father-in-law, who was on his deathbed. His father-in-law, Loyal
Davis
was an atheist. That is extraordinary. When has this been made public? Just recently?
Well, it's been in the library. It just was uncovered recently. Okay. Someone was doing some research and ran across it. It hasn't been private. It was written about 1982 or so after he'd been in the White House for a year or two. And I always kind of considered Ronald Reagan's faith as kind of the cultural faith that some patriotic Americans have. I was born in this country, and therefore I must be a Christian. God, he talked about God a lot, but this is an insight into his faith in Jesus
yes.
that I really had not heard, but it's very, I'll look forward to having a talk with him one day when I get to heaven.
Yeah. I understood it. I thought he was, truly a born again Christian, mm-hmm. but I had not, that's just what I'd been told or what I'd read. This, again, as you say, this letter that's been found in the Reagan Library gives clear indication, not only of his own deep faith in Christ, but also the fact that he felt responsible to reach out to a father-in-law who was dying and who was an atheist.
Yep. Mm.
And that's, to me, also a sign of a true Christian.
Regenerate nature. Hey, did you watch the Emmys last night?
Oh yeah, you know it, buddy. No, I did not. I did not watch the Emmys. I don't even watch the Academy Awards.
No.
To tell you the truth, I am sick to death of Hollywood and their ilk. I know there are some decent people there, and let me just say this one last thing. I do give wide latitude for unbelievers to act like unbelievers,
mm-hmm.
But I'm reaching a point where I just I'm sick of what they say. So
this will not restore.
This
your faith,
is not going to restore it.
I don't think it will. The Emmys, as you might expect, Hollywood's self congratulations for well done on TV.
Yes,
the Emmys were full of political stuff, but there was one particular moment that a lot of Christians are taking note to, because Colin Jost and Michael Che, who are the Weekend Update anchors now on SNL, Saturday Night Live, they were co-hosting. And Michael Che, well, and Colin Jost had this banter. This is cut four.
We just want to say a quick hello to the thousands of you here in the audience tonight and to the hundreds watching at home. Hi, Silver Lining Senior Center.
You know who's not? But my mother's not watching.
What?
Well, she said she doesn't like watching white award shows because you guys don't thank Jesus enough. That's true. The only white people that thank Jesus are Republicans and ex-crackheads. So.
Well, there you go.
No, so I don't know who either of those two guys are. Are they black?
One that cracked the Jesus joke is okay. Black, Michael Che.
Listen, he was talking about his mom?
Yes.
Well, thank goodness he's got a mom who's a Christian, apparently. He's probably praying for him. Yeah. And listen, I will say this. That's the kind of exchange, and now people don't hate on me, okay, who are listening, where I go, well, they're unbelievers. I joked around about Jesus before I came to know him, made blasphemous statements and mocked and told, you know, funny jokes about the second coming and stuff like that. But I'll say this, too. It's also clear indication to me that, by and large, Hollywood is secular. And they don't like Jesus, and they don't like Christians. And that comes through more and more, and they're more and more open about it. So I just look at something like that. Walker, let you jump in. But I look at something like that, and I say, yeah, that's kind of what I expect. But Christians ought not to be deceived. You shouldn't let people into your living room via the television or your big screen TV.
That's right.
Who are going to lead your kids in a totally different way.
Yeah, and that's the thing we can take from this. Is this surprising? Not really. It's disappointing that it's become culturally acceptable, because if you said something like that 50 years ago, you would probably be shot down by NBC and all the major news outlets. Right. But I agree. We gotta be careful about letting that into our house, because then you go to supporting stuff. You're supporting people who are bashing your Christian faith.
Right,
and,
right.
Of course, that's not a wise thing to do.
All right,
what else you got?
I got one more thing, and I know it's going to disappoint everybody. Chick-fil-A has decided to open on Sunday.
Oh, come on. No, wait.
Wait, let me read here. Oh, it's just one Chick-fil-A. I'm sorry. It's the it's the Chick-fil-A. It's one in North Carolina. Oh, I'm sorry. They opened on Sunday, had all their employees come in, and they coordinated with the Red Cross and handed out 500 sandwiches and 1,200 nuggets to evacuee centers from three different shelters. Just a one-time, maybe two, until this crisis passes. Chick-fil-A is coming to the rescue of the community.
How can you hate Chick-fil-A?
I don't know.
They do such good work in events like this and tragedies like this.
You can only hate Chick-fil-A if you hate God.
There you go.
I think that's clear. And that when you told us this story during our story meeting this morning, I thought, what?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. And then you told us the rest of the story.
The rest of the story.
Good for them. Handing free food out. That's what you would think a Christian-based company would do, is jump in when the need is greatest.
All the employees said they were more than happy to come in on Sunday to do that.
Well, that is awesome. Kudos to that one Chick-fil-A who stood out for doing, I think, what Jesus would want them to do. All right, folks, that's all the time we have for today's Issues Today. More great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. Lord willing, we'll see you tomorrow for another edition of Today's Issues.